All these roles are just algorithmically determined by things like the spacing, the heat maps, the utility throwing, all of this. It just decides it for me. And it gets it right almost all the time. There are only three major exceptions in Tier 1 where it's gotten it wrong. And one of them is Blame F on Big. It thinks that Tabson's IGLing.
Right.
Which I'll let the viewers sort of draw conclusions from that. I'm not going to say anything
myself.
Exactly, yeah. Even when he's IGLing, like, even the algorithm doesn't believe it, you know?
It's another week. That means another episode where possible of Roster Mechanic. Obviously, we're going through the teams now. Again, if people don't know, in theory, we have massive amounts of leeway slash mobility with this series that we can actually do an episode on a team that hasn't made a roster move and maybe won't even, because we can talk about hypothetically what they can do. It's obviously an excuse, really, to use some of the stuff Loz has come up with in terms of modelling and different advanced statistics as a different way to put a lens on teams and try and show where might the problems be. And on the Falcons episode, maybe it was even where there's actually unexpected synergies or like improvement, etc., that you might not have noticed if they haven't lifted the trophy. So one of the ones that I, if you notice in general, we've done some where it's like, how could we improve this team? And then there are some where it's more like a little bit critical. I think this is a rare example of an episode where I'm just going to say it at the outset, a lot of this is going to be pretty harsh and quite critical, because we've decided one of the teams, if you think about the story of 2026, one name you cannot tell the story of the year without mentioning is Paravision, of course, who automatically is divisive because they have Jame in their team and then they have the Jame style of play and Jame time and all that jazz. Then they've got the whole thing with Dastan where he's doing the like super stern, I'm the coach who screams in your face, Alex Ferguson hairdryer treatment type thing. But bizarrely, because that's become like a whole thing where him and Jim get all the credit, that's like beloved in this team, even though if Simple just does a glance at someone, you'd think he'd like pulled out a belt and started whipping him, you know. So again, one of those things. So the point is, on this episode, it's a rare example I've ever seen of a team that you can be quite critical of that obviously peaked a few months ago and has had some of its worst results recently. But what makes it rare is usually actually top teams, because they're all like big names and there's massive like career status implications to being in, kicked from a team or replaced, usually actually big teams play it pretty close to their chest in terms of like, will we make a roster move, what would trigger it. This is one of the only teams I've seen where they've basically been quite overt and explicit. As far as I can tell, they're not doing it performatively. That essentially, if there wasn't the major right now and the way that eligibility works, they probably already would have made a roster move. Like, that's why actually I think this one's going to be fun, because on the one hand, we're going to sort of shit on Paravision a little bit, but justifiably so. And I actually get the sense they themselves know what we're talking about and agree with us. So where should we start, Loz? Obviously, the easy way to frame Paravision is this. One of the reasons I say we're going to be quite harsh is actually, in a way, it's almost a backhanded compliment. This team, if you'd have looked at the end of last year, everyone remembers this detail, even though they never mentioned this part, which is, this team obviously sort of broke out at the last major, didn't they? The Budapest. But people forget that was when they had AW, not Zwei, obviously. That was with a slightly different roster. So it wasn't quite the same team, but obviously then they took that massive level up at Blast. Even after that, they were fucking around making finals, playoff runs. Now they've had a period where they've had some, not only bad, but some quite underwhelming results and some tournaments where you'd think they would blast through all of it and win it, but they haven't even come close. So actually, the interesting thing is, I do think, one thing I can say at the outset is, the reason I'm going to be quite harsh, and I do think it's one of the rare teams that's won a tournament that you can say, you could cut like three of these players and it wouldn't even be like some outrageous move, is, actually, isn't that what we all love about Paravision on some level? That it is that Jame just went. I even say that Zwei's the star player. To be fair, he reclaimed him too after Spirit. People probably thought that guy's just going to go down to a K27 type team and be forgotten. So let's start there. In some ways, the reason we have to be harsh is this team sort of actually overperformed earlier in the year and sort of got a seam of play that maybe made them better than anyone thought. I mean, all I'll remind people of is, right before they fell off, if you go back to that Blast Rotterdam game where they played Vitality, man, that was one of the best games I've seen anyone give this Vitality. And this Vitality, I think, is probably the greatest team to ever play CS. So actually, I'm going to say at the outset, the reason I'm going to be harsh is because I think the upsides of Paravision are incredible. Actually, mad props to Jim, mad props to Dastan. Even this style of play they've pioneered is counterintuitive, but it has a logic to it. But obviously there's a lot of things that are kind of a bit leaky in the ship, as it were, and that you could potentially replace. But I'll say at the outset this, I'm going to say the same thing I said on all my talk shows. I don't want it to just be like, lol, just keep Jame and cut everyone, though, because I also do think surely part of that charm and that very unorthodox style that they're playing, some of it must come from the players too, and in fact maybe even the fact that they're not all veterans. So I want to say on this one, there's as many different areas. Where should we go first, do you think?
Yeah, so I think we should just start with an overall look at who the players are and what their kind of roles are, because I think one thing that's unique about Paravision is that obviously they have an AWP IGL, right? And that's not exactly very in fashion right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it creates some interesting things with like the different rifling roles in the team. And so I wanted to start with this dual swing graph, right? Because one thing that's really weird about Paravision is that their stars aren't necessarily the ones bringing the firepower. Like, the ones in the star roles aren't necessarily the ones shooting the hardest. If you look at the top right, obviously, the only ones that are actually positive on both sides are Jaime and Zwei. And if you look at Zwei's, like, categorization here, he's in that hard support category. And the reason for that is because when you have an AWP IGL, you end up with this rifler that sort of has to do the duties in terms of utility throwing and spacing and trading right. that an IGL would normally yes. do, but without the cooling. And actually, if you think back a while ago to when Twists was going to join that Cadian-led Liquid team, he was the first one to sort of publicly make this point, that whenever you have an AWP IGL, it creates this kind of role that doesn't exist on any other team. And it's actually quite good for the player in it, because you get to be very creative, right? You get to be part of designing the strats, you get to be part of throwing the utility, you get to sort of pick your timings here and there. And for Zwei in this team, like, it looks like he does an excellent job of that. The flip side, though, is that like, you don't really have any other riflers on this team that are doing much to support him at all in terms of firepower, right? Like, all three of the other players are in that bottom left-hand corner with all the supports and IGLs, even the two players that should nominally at least be the stars in this team. Like, Nota, for example, is meant to be this star, like, refragger, trade fragger. Like, think about Elige in Liquid, for example. Yeah. That's kind of where he's meant to be. And Jello is meant to be mobs in that sense, so considering that, it's kind of scathing on Paravision that only two of their players are anywhere near sort of the positive category, and the other three are clearly being uplifted by the system and not through just pure skill expression of their own.
Yeah, so a point you're making here, which is quite key, is, as you say, I mean, if you think about it, right, most teams, this is why the Carrigan discussion in Falcons was interesting, because there's two ways you can have that discussion. A noob or a casual goes, he is fragging badly and the number is red, this cannot work. And it's like, you must be new to Carrigan and say yes, mate. Like, that was always the case for years at this point in time. So instead, actually, the nuanced discussion of the same topic is, when does the threshold kick in where it's too bad overall? Because actually, at the moment in Counter-Strike, no matter how many times all my friends around us keep going, starting now, no, wait a second, starting now every IGL has to frag. They keep doing that, if you notice, for like 10 years solid, mate. Like, they've been telling you that for a million years. That same people who also go, there are no roles, everyone do everything. Like, these are all brilliant utopian ideas, boys. This don't work in reality. So when people tell you that, the point is, we do all at the moment currently model IGL as, you're probably going to be the worst fragger. And in fact, usually in a team, you are going to, one, quite often be part of the entry pack. That's just a thing you tend to do because it's the easiest place to call the game from, since you can very quickly react in the mid round, obviously. And then, as you're saying about utility, probably the most underrated detail is something actually I've often used as one of my principles of Counter-Strike, if you've ever heard me talk to IGLs, which is, as an IGL, one of the things you tend to do by default on T-side is take a tricky smoke or flash that is essentially based on like the timing of when your team is going to synchronize, and you just do it yourself. You don't take someone else and go, right, listen, here's what I'm thinking, and here's when I make this call. Because what you realise is, wait a minute, if I'm the one making the read and the call, and I'm the one in the server doing a million hours anyway because I'm the agile, why don't I just throw that flash and then let them do the simple one, or them run in when I say go, basically. So, as you say, the unique thing about Paravision at the outset is, you can actually argue, by the way, that they, here's the thing, I notice this never does happen. When we all say best fragging IGL, we all immediately think of the people who do the low fragging role, but are really good at it, even though technically people like Blitz are sort of cheating on that because they're not totally doing the low fragging role. But we think of that sort of person. I know it's not what ever says Jim. Technically, I'm pretty sure by stats, Jim would probably be the winner from best fragging IGL, because in his team, he uses the bloody AWP all the time. He's pretty effective with it. But also, as you say, it means we have to think of how we model the rest of the team differently, because essentially, as you're saying, players that we might think of as a star, they may not actually need to frag as much in their team. In fact, obviously in Farage, they haven't had to. And as you're saying, also, actually, to some degree, it's changed crucially, not just Jim. He's doing his unique role is now allowing Zwei to have a role that essentially no one has, right? Like, I put it this way, when people want to contrast quite poorly, hey, look at when he was in Spirit. They couldn't have done this role in Spirit. That role wouldn't have existed. Like, surely, like, Chopper or someone would be doing that in that team, or I don't know, would be at this point. How would you contrast that element, like, what it's done to Zwei's role?
Yeah, so crucially, what we're not saying is that he's playing different, like, positions on the CT side or something, yes. right? Because if you look at, like Zwei's still playing all the really hard angles on the CT side.
Which just seems to be a specialty of his, right?
Yeah, he just seems to have gotten a lot better at it now. That's the main difference. And on the T side, that's where this difference really kicks in, because I'm actually really proud of this role classification algorithm, because it almost always gets who the IGL is correct. Like, it's very, very good at that. And there are only really three.
Oh, you didn't actually top down put this on. The data pulls and decides who these roles are. I thought you assigned that manually.
No. All these roles are just algorithmically determined by things like the spacing, the heat maps, the utility throwing, all of this. It just decides it for me. And it gets it right almost all the time. There are only three major exceptions in Tier 1 where it's gotten it wrong. And one of them is Macca on 3D Max. It thinks that gravity's... Because obviously Macca's like an AWP, right? So I think he's AWP IGLing and gravity actually isn't. And then obviously he's way in this Paravision team. And the other one is actually Blame F on Big. It thinks that Tabson's IGLing.
Right.
Which I'll let the viewers sort of draw conclusions from that. I'm not going to say anything
myself.
Exactly, yeah. Even when he's IGLing, like, even the algorithm doesn't believe it, you know? But I think... Yeah, I think the fact that Zwei gets a bit more room to be creative in this team is the major difference between this and Spirit, because Spirit have a looser style where, like, the players that get to be the creative midfielders, if it were football, are obviously Donk and a little bit Shiro, right? Definitely not Zwei, whereas in this team, it's kind of him and Jame, I would say, are the two that sort of get the most creative freedom. And Nota is actually supposed to be doing a bit of that as well, but I think Nota... It's not actually a roles thing with Nota, because looking at Paravision play and looking at his numbers relative to his resources and all the things we'll speak about in a minute, I think Nota might actually be the worst player in Tier 1 right now. I think he is absolutely terrible in terms of his output relative to the positions he finds himself in and sort of how much setup he's receiving. And you can kind of see that, right? Because he's down there with Belchinok, who is obviously their like hard support, hard anchor guy. And you have... Zello next to him, who's, yes, he's a space taker, but he's much more the mob sort of space taker, the one that's like going in first into bomb sites and getting traded. So the fact that Nota's firepower is like down there with them is pretty scathing. And let me start with why. Let's go to the CT resources. So if you have a look at the players and their CT star points along the x-axis, as we've discussed before, and the good gun percentage on the y-axis, right, you can kind of see that the two players who are like getting theirs are Nota and Jame, right? And notice this like primary rotator he's getting his good guns all the time. Zello, Belchinok, and Sway, like they're not receiving much on the CT side. They're sort of being fed to the wolves a bit.
And also, because it's a Jame team, they save the AWP a million fucking times. So Jame, including Jame, saving it. And Sway has the gun all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you can see like a pattern here with the colours where like Jame's right in the middle of where all the AWPers go. Nota's sort of in the middle of where all the Star Rifles go. Zello is right at the bottom of where all these like second rotations.
Put it this way, as a layman who's looking at this graph, the most obvious thing that you're pointing out here basically is if you actually took someone who had true star capacity and gave him the resources Nota's getting, he could have an immediate and massive impact on this team, presumably, right?
Yeah, I would assume considerably better. Right. I think a player that just makes better decisions, and Maui's made this point a couple of times now, and I fully agree with him. Nota looks like when you put him in situations where he has to be a bit more creative, he just picks the worst option like a lot of the times. He's definitely one of these players that seems extremely uncomfortable, and to his credit, we did see him have an incredible grand final when they actually won that event that
they won.
He was like the MVP of that final by some margin, and yet we haven't seen anything even close to that level ever since then.
Yes.
And I think that's honestly the reason, or maybe the biggest reason, why Paravision have been on such a steep decline, because you're just not seeing him put up anything close to that these days.
Yes. So, okay, by the way, we're doing the thing now, obviously, where we're identifying this. We'll try and come up with some, like, potential suggestions later, because obviously the Russian scene is super deep. One thing I wanted to say on some of the things you were saying there was, first of all, what you're actually saying also confirms what, like, my eye test tells me, which is I always used to compliment in this team, but it's why I gave that warning earlier. Like, don't just strip the whole team out and make it James Weir plus three different players. Because the point is, if you put in a load of players, like, I told you, the biggest mistake, and everyone's making it so far, even to some degree my boy Maui, which is this. If you want them to say just that they're going to take Flit, who obviously used to play with Jim, that's fine, take Flit. If you want to say, oh, we're just going to take Fame, I can make that work. We can't just remake VP, but we're just Jamin's way, because then actually a lot of what you like about the charm of this team and why Jim has reinvented himself as an IGL will disappear, because the whole point is those players will want like the green light to do things. They'll want more say, time, space, etc. Whereas like surely one of the things about this team that we all love is it makes perfect sense to me that you're saying that Zwei and Jim that have sort of the more creative freedom. When I watch this team, I always think to myself, two things. One, the amazing like insta rotations they do and crazy players look like the whole benefit of the others being beginners and not experienced at tier one is they don't question Jame. They don't do that like matchmaker thing, which I think if people don't know, even real teams do, of like, actually, I'm going to cancel this call. Like, that's not the move. Like, I'm the Starlink space taker and this isn't the round for that. Like, I saw their setup. You know, that happens in real teams. Like, I did an interview with Apex where he said sometimes he says no to ops for a lurk. Like, in this team, you imagine there's no discourse. James says jump, and they don't even say how high, they just jump. That would be my analogy. And then the other thing, if everyone remembers, it's more on CT side, but on this team, people will know that everyone's loving how James calls these super fast rotations. Funnily enough, the only time I've ever seen this actually was another AWP IGL. It was Kadian in Heroic at the end of CSGO. They also used to do a similar thing on CT side. It looked like Kadian just got to make a read, and then everyone just did whatever he said. They didn't bother worrying, like, where's my crosshair? Am I getting this? They just moved as he said. Well, obviously the main issue here would be you don't want to take too much of that out in order to put in the stars and the fragging, because we're going to lose what in theory, I mean, surely what you're doing there is you ultimately play into James' ability, because he's sort of playing StarCraft instead of just being a captain in a team, isn't he? He's actually moving his pieces. But I do think that's part of where their success comes from. And also, sadly, that's why surely there's diminishing returns with this roster, because at the beginning when no one understood any of this, because remember, no one even had these guys on their radar. I think people had to lose to these guys like twice before anyone even really believed it was like, oh, like, I mean, the Jokers Falcons literally did. They were still talking shit before that last game because they couldn't believe that was actually a real loss. They assumed, you know, the Naughty guy had the life game, and they never thought that there's something about the style that's making you lose. So that's the tricky thing for me, I think, Laws, is like, you could replace all individual players with a much better player from the Russian scene, but I don't want to lose some of that charm, because I do think James killing it with how he calls the game.
Yeah, I think Liquid's a perfect analogy in this, because it's almost like an A-B case study even. Because think about what ultimately was responsible for Liquid's undoing, right? Like, obviously it was never said explicitly, but from all the factual information we can sort of gather from the outside, it seems like maybe in that team, Kadian wasn't able to be, like, the director in the way that Jame is now, right? Maybe Twist and Yekindar weren't just jumping.
They're not the guys who just go along with it, yeah, of course.
And obviously they're players that, you know, they've played for a while, they have their own ideas, and it looks like that completely undermined a system like Kadian.
I can tell you in their team, quite literally, one of the problems from knowing what was going on, I never did the bloody video, but sorry, I've said everything on shores now. That is quite literally what happened, Laws. What essentially happened was Kadian wanted it to just be, you know, from my lips to your ears, shut the fuck up, just do what I say. And their whole thing, twisting your kind, I was like, but where's the playbook? I want to see what the players, and I want to have a say in it, and I want to contribute ideas. And then we're assuming in this team, if you did that, you'd immediately short-circuit James' style, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's why, as much as it would be a fun experiment to see, like, you would never want to put, like, a donk in this kind of a team.
Yes.
Right? I don't think, anyway.
Even when people say Kiyosuke, which, listen, monetarily, logistically, could never happen. But even if you did, I actually don't think that would be a great move, mate. I imagine a player like that wants a bit of green light at times to do what he wants, you know, find the jewels, etc.
Yeah, I would say so. And actually, on that, let's just skip ahead a bit to the team map control graph.
Let's do it.
Because we're talking about, like, finding jewels on the T side. One thing that's really unique about Paravision's T side is that they basically don't take map control more than, like, the one part of the map that they want to take at the initial outset of the round. Like, whether it's they make some call, we're going to take middle, and then we're going to split donut to A or something. Like, it seems like they're all way above the average in terms of T controls, like, space-taking attempts per round, right? And I think that definitely speaks to the kind of system that James running, because he doesn't want these guys to overpeak. He doesn't want them to throw their life away. He doesn't want them to do more than, like, the bare minimum, essentially, to get to a bombsite and, like, set up and execute, right? And I think what's really interesting about Paravision is that on the CT side, I'll mention this in a second, they're one of the better teams at sort of stacking bombsites correctly.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the flip side, on the T side, they're actually one of the worst at walking into stacks, because a lot of the time... Like, Jame is one of these IGLs that seems to enjoy calling without that much map control. Like, he seems to want to call much more based on sort of patterns and utility, and he's almost calling blind, except obviously for him it isn't blind, because, I don't know, he's psychic or something.
Got you with a fail or something. Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of bears itself out in terms of, if you're like a star rifler on the T side in a Jame system, you don't get to just, like, brawl all the time. You have to do your, like, set gunfights and then eventually collapse, like, group together and do an execute. And if you look at where Jello is, the bottom right of this, whenever they are executing into a site, him and Belchinok, but mostly him by quite some margin, are the players going in first. So even though technically Jello is like the space taker on this team, he's being used in quite an abusive manner. Like, almost always, right? Yeah. Like, almost a third of the time, he's the guy going first into the bombsite, which is not the glamorous part. And Nota's the guy that's sort of getting a bit more, even though it's only a little bit more freedom to sort of pick his own fights, which no one else sort of is. And if you were to take a Kiyosuke, like you said, his game might just get shut down completely by this, by having to be this restrained, right? Because even in Falcons, we've seen from Kiyosuke, one of his biggest problems is overpeaking, not being able to just sit and like play a crossfire with Tessers on the B-bomb site. He wants to swing, you know, he gets antsy and he wants to take his fights. And yeah, I don't know. In this team, you can't really do that.
Because the other thing I'm going to just say at the outset is, one of the things I think that's cool about, I try to like spitball, what can they change, what will the effect be? I'm not even saying this to be a diss. I think whoever gets caught, if it's Belchior, it was Nota, I also just don't think we see them at this level again. I think they do go down to being at the sort of Magic Gear 27 level. They might be all right, but the joke is, actually what you're saying even implies they could have their own sway like Revolution, where they can actually look better as an individual player. The difference is, though, they just won't be in a team where they have the chance to win like this and go head-to-head with the Vitalities of the world. And by the way, they probably shouldn't, but that's also why I thought it was an interesting episode, because if we're all going to praise how clever the system is and how it's used these inexperienced players, then we can't then go take out all that and just do the same system but with the most experienced players. And also, if we're just going to rerun Virtus Pro, what was this all about? Are we all really... I thought the whole point we were all making, I thought we were all on board with this, was that, like, in a way, VP did Jim dirty because he was able to bounce back, but surely Jim had to learn something from that experience himself, which is why I assume actually he himself then went and got the opposite type of squad, where it's all inexperienced people who just listen to him and do what he says. Also, I'll throw this in there as well. If you notice how James has this like enigmatic quality to him, I get the sense that you actually have to make it a pairing. In the same way as in Na'Vi, I think it has to be Alexi B and Blade. It's not just Blade, it's not just Alexi B. I imagine if you had Alexi B and Kixan, it wouldn't be as good. I imagine if you had Blade and Kixan, or you had Zonic and Alexi B, those also wouldn't be as good combo. So I also do think the Dastan part is key, because to me, when you see all this like authoritarian elements from Dastan, he's essentially like the enforcer of whatever they're doing. I imagine he's the guy who makes sure you have the buy-in and you don't, like, it looks to me like, here's the interesting thing, considering Jim has mastermind control, I don't think I've ever seen him like chastise someone, bro, or say something in an interview that seemed harsh. It seems like he almost delegates that to Dastan and he just calls the bloody game, doesn't he? It's quite interesting. Also, what you said earlier, I thought an interesting thing you said about when you looked at the roles there and how you can have a role that's assigned as a star, even though maybe they don't have the resources in the game, for example. That's another thing I think that we have to try and change in the discussion about roles on this series when we model teams, is you have to also think of it like football or any team sport. I always say this line that I was told in basketball, because in basketball, they have quite literally just five positions. And no matter what team setup you run, in theory, for the sake of like a shorthand, you assign someone one of the five positions, even though, much like football, maybe you don't, like, maybe you have the false nine. It's not even a true striker that plays just above the ball. He plays, you know, it's a bit like that. You can have like exceptions, but the point is you'd still on the paper team sheet say he's the striker. It's just he plays striker in a very unusual way. One of the things I think is quite cool about teams like this, and hopefully others will do in the series, is you obviously can have people who have the resources on the spot to be like a hard support, but maybe like back in the day with old Valde and OG, maybe they're actually a star from that position, though. They give you like way more output that you should never be able to get, like maybe a bit does or someone, or Heavy God obviously. So I also think that's another thing, like this team, essentially what we're talking about is this team almost has like an inverted structure. Like, actually, it's the AWPer and IGL, but in this case, more IGL than AWPer. Like, he even uses the AWP in that way. He never tries to do Monty shit where he's just going for the duel, does he? He clearly tries to set up the angles and create things and open up the site, etc. It's that mixed with, like, the fucking hard anchor support player. Those are, like, the two stars of this team. It's why the joke of the other ones is, the reason why you can replace them is, surely there are a lot of people who just have good hands who would want to join a team like this and you won't have to level up in the same. You just have to do what James says.
Yeah, I think one of the concerns about this team is that, like, the stars might be getting flattened slightly,
right?
But in exchange, like, the base level of the team increases massively. Like, that might be the kind of trade off that James teams just kind of have. Even looking back at his VP days, right? It seemed like they managed to consistently get to like fifth or sixth in the world, but they would never go higher than that, right? They just managed to stay to that level, and they would have different stars join that looked really, really good on lower level teams, and they would just sort of like slowly get worse and worse and worse. But the team's level would stay about the same. And so I do think, actually, to give some credit to Nota, like, when he was on lower level teams before this one, he was like one of King T's favorite prospects, right, for example, for quite a while. Like, he seemed like one of these players that had a lot of potential. And obviously now we're not really seeing that as much. We're just seeing a very error-prone player that couldn't really adapt. So it is definitely possible, what you mentioned, that he could just go back to like a K27 or like a HOTU or whatever and become a star for one of these teams and level up that way, right? Like, that's entirely possible, but you're kind of sacrificing that to play in a James system. And I think at this point it's pretty clear that, like, they are handicapped by Nota in these roles, not because he's a bad player necessarily, but because his play in these roles and with like the decisions he has to make and sort of the requirements for him in this team, he's not living up to them. And maybe he's not capable of living up to them.
Right. I have a couple of angles we can go with, and you can decide when you want to segue into a graphic. So one thing I did want to ask about Jim, because as we've pointed out, that's also totally unique. First of all, most people never have AWP and IGL on the same team. And then also, your AWP on some level always has to be having some impact. It can't really just be looking at the map and holding an angle. You have to obviously get frags, which he does do. Right. In his team, the obvious question, which has always been the divisive topic with Jim, is how much does he warp the team around himself? Whether for good or for ill, depends obviously what you think the result of that is. Because I do think part of the reason some people didn't like him early on is it's that simple concept of, like, we all don't want people to save too much when you could go for the round. So in his team's people's perception, if you want to make a caricature, is he's just trying to save the op for himself, isn't he? I will say, this is something that was pointed out to me actually very early on in the Avangar VP days in CSGO, which I thought was a very shrewd point. Someone said one of the reasons why, even though certainly there are probably rounds he could go for in a clutch and maybe win, which would win you the game, another factor though about the fact that he so consistently saves though is it means he gets scenarios where under normal circumstances there never could be an AWP on that next round. You know what I mean? A normal team, like if the rest of them are saving, there'd never just be a glass cannon AWP or a saved AWP only on like the banana inferno, for example, you know. But the fact that when you play against Jame, you know it's possible, that will actually change how you even play against them when they're saving, for example. So what would you say on the Jame aspect of it? How does he warp the team? Does he take all the resources? What is it like in that sense?
Yeah, so we've kind of already touched on the CT resources, where if you look at Jame on the CT side, like, he's actually not that bad in terms of being that resource heavy. But if we now flip to the T resources graph, you can see there's sort of like all the AWPers off to the right, and right at the top there are like three that are considerably above all the other AWPers, right? You've got Jame, and I think the other two are like Molodoy and someone else, I can't remember now off the top of my head, but they're essentially, maybe it's Monacy, they're basically these players that are getting like force fed the AWP all the time. So on the T side, it seems like that's where you're seeing Jame have this pressure to sort of run his own system around himself, and that's the part that hasn't really ever changed,
right?
Interestingly, I haven't got it here, but I've posted some of these graphs before in the past. You can find them on my Twitter or whatever. Jame is one of these guys that does have the AWP in his hands like considerably more than most AWPers, but interestingly, like, he's actually technically one of the best AWPers in terms of like how many shots he has to take to get a kill.
Right.
Like, he doesn't miss very much with the AWP. He sets himself up for like the easy one.
By the way, he also does do, I have to say, if you're someone who doesn't have the hands to be Monacy, he doesn't try to do that though. That's what I like about his game, bro. Like, he actually has, even though like people might think he oversaves to it, he has a very responsible style though. I know what you mean. He does the old school style of open where you know where the opponent is. You put a nice big angle on the wall, you just set it up and you hit the off angle. I always say he just does the tripwire shot half the time, mate, but it's really effective though. He's really smart, obviously, it's set up.
Yeah, he's excellent at like getting a flash in and just like slow peeking into an angle and just setting himself up with the easy one. And on the T side, you know, that can work excellently. Unfortunately, it does require a lot of sacrifice from, in particular, Jello and Belchinok, I've seen. Like, those guys will literally jump around a corner so that Jame can like scope in to trade, if you know what I mean. Yes. You'll see that pattern emerge a lot. But actually, sticking on the series,
which, by the way, just to put a little like a thread here for later when we talk about people coming in, I don't know how many Star Riflers boys are going to want to just jump around a corner while the AWP gets killed. Normally, they want someone to go so they can get the kill. So we'll think about that when we consider the roster moves, certainly.
Yeah, just sticking to that, like, Nota again is clearly, like, aside from Jame, of course, the player that's getting the most good guns into his hand. Like, he's again significantly above the other players. Sort of around his role, around his area, right? And this sort of feeds into the idea that if I were to replace anyone, like you said, there aren't many players that would want to do what Jello has to do. There aren't many players that would want to do what Belchinok has to do. There are probably quite a few players that would be better at and want to do what Nota does.
Right.
So that's why, for my money, even though a lot of the discussion has been around, like, you know, Belchinok's got to go, he makes bad decisions, Nota, for my money, is a lot easier to replace than Belchinok would be. And I think I actually want to skip ahead to the playing sights graph now, because we touched on it already, but it's one of these features of Paravision that's really interesting to me. Their anchors are on the actual bomb sites far more often than like most other teams, basically. They love playing from the actual bomb site. And you'll see this a lot, right? They absolutely love to do like gamble stacks. It's kind of similar to how on the T side, you know, they don't necessarily probe for map control this much. They're more willing to sort of just go off of James' intuitive feel and read. They're willing to do the same on the CT sides, right? And this seems to be a feature that's like inherent to all IGL teams, because Cadian also used to be a master at this, by the way. Think about how many times he would coordinate like a CT like double push or something. Like, you think about Inferno, right? He might be holding Banana with his AWP, and he would tell like Shush and Tessas or whatever to like double push the Inferno apps or whatever, and like take some space whenever like space is lost elsewhere on the map. It seems like all AWP IGL systems seem to have this push-pull feature. But Paravision, especially right now, seem to be doing it the best, right? Because this is a bit of a... it's a bit of an experimental stat. I was just playing with this for the past couple of days, so there are a lot of things I haven't considered. But along the x-axis here, it's CT correct stack percentage. And what that basically is I filtered to just times in the rounds where it's 4v4, 4v5, 5v5. So most of the players are alive. And it's whether or not, when the bomb and like a group of players basically try and go into a site, whether the majority of the CTs are on the right bomb site, or if they're like in mid or on the wrong bomb site, basically. And of all the teams that are like stacking correctly, basically, they've got the majority of the players in the right place. Paravision are like right up there. So it does bear out statistically, even by this kind of naive representation, that Paravision are just excellent at stacking sites. So yeah, that's not just like an eye test thing. This is real. And yeah, it makes sense, you know, considering the kind of style of CT side they want to play.
Yeah. I even think, by the way, that's one of my theories, actually, as to why, historically, in every sort of team, when he has good players, when he has medium players, when he has nobody players, as to why GM teams always often struggle to have, like, a very strong map pool. It's because, first of all, the classic T-side style he had, where he used to run the clock down all the time, that just doesn't work that well on all the maps. Like, you don't really do that on, like, a Dust 2 or a Mirage, do you? And it's not really the way that map's played. So, if you think about that, the up-tempo maps of anything. Also, on CT side, that style of calling you're talking about, I want to just emphasise this for a second, right? I have seen a lot of CT callers in my life, like, you know, call the stack, like, if people don't know, Zeus and Na'Vi used to love to do a random blind stack, etc., right? A lot of them do, though, by the way, just let their players play. Like, they don't try to make any elaborate, like, hey team, let's all do this. That's more for like a low buy, or you have to do some crazy pistol force to get back in the game. So it's more like you pick your moment, like a Carrigan style. The reason why James' style is so key is he really is like full-on IGL in them on CT side, and actually he's calling these stacks a lot. And I can tell you, if you know how to break down a demo and look at what, like, essentially a model of what the CT IGL could be seeing, bro, the style of how they do the stacks is actually incredible. Like, I'm not even trolling. Essentially, if you want to be like not as salacious, he just has an amazing intuitive feel for the game. If you want to be silly, he actually does seem like he's psychic. I'm not even trolling, because on two maps in particular, like, I think it's mainly Inferno but a little bit of Mirage too, I have seen some mind-blowing fucking stacks, bro, where it's like, as I'm watching in the watch party and I'm just looking at the fucking radar that has every player on, you would genuinely think Jim was looking at the radar too, because as you say, he's not making these stacks where it's like, you know, someone on one part of the map makes like a CT information play. They even do, like, you know, you use utility to take a spot and see is there anyone there, then you make a read based on process. Nick's not doing any of that. Like, well, as you're saying, what's bizarre is they sit completely back in the sights, like it was a retake simulator and they were the ones holding the sight, and they just, he just somehow can do these calls with no info. Like, it's not even like he's seeing, you know, the first flash from a conditioning sequence and he's just guessed what it is. He just somehow, like, genuinely, like, has the fucking grey Biff's grey sports helmet, like, and knows what's coming that round. Like, I've never seen anything like it, mate. Does this information bear out what we're talking about? Is that actually represented in this info?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say so. And I'm actually glad you mentioned like the map pool as well, because I'm not one of these people that actually holds that much weight in like map win percentage stats. I don't think they're that valuable for analysis. because, like, I think about Paravision's matches against, like, Vitality, for example. Notice they always, like, level up to the level of the team they're playing. Yes. Like, how many times have they almost beaten Vitality on these maps, like Inferno, for example, through, like, these crazy gamble stacks? It seems like whatever Jaime and Dastan have going on, like, one of their strengths seems to be almost Blade-esque in that they're so good at prepping for these teams where they're very well-defined, they have a lot of tape on them, and they can just sit in the lab for a bit and cook up some response. So they seem incredibly adaptive in that regard. But one thing I do want to point out is that if you think about Paravision's map pool, like the maps that they sort of want to go to, you're mostly thinking of Dust2, Ancient, and Inferno. And Inferno is that crucial third one, because if you think about earlier this year, when Paravision won, you know, that Blast tournament, for example, Inferno was like a really strong like third map.
Yes.
They had something like a 70% win rate on it for a time. Now, if you look at it, it's completely gone off a cliff. Like, they basically can't win on that map anymore. They'll still have the odd close game, but even against, like, some lesser teams, I can't remember who it was. It was, like, an M80 level team that they lost to recently. And it seems like, for whatever reason, they have just kind of stopped being able to play that map as well. And on Mirage as well, like, Mirage is one of these maps where I seem to, like, remember Jaime having a pretty good track record on it, but recently it's just they've been struggling on it severely. And I think they even recognize that, because they've actually started doing these, like, weird role swaps. So Belchinok, for example, think about literally any map. He's normally on whatever, the hardest anchor, like, the big site anchor role is, if you know what I mean. Whatever one's way he isn't on. And for whatever reason, they've decided to put him short and swap him with Jello on the CT side. I have no idea why from the outside. It doesn't seem to make any sense to me. But the only explanation I can kind of think of, just guessing, is that they know they have to change something and they aren't happy with like how they're running the CT sides there. So it does seem to me imminent that they're going to make a change for one of those two players, like one of either Nota or Belchinok, because when you're at the point where you're just switching players around and hoping for the best, I think you know it's a little bit doomed.
All right, let's do it then. Let's try and speculate. First of all, obviously, there's two ways we can do this. First of all, we've actually picked some literally specific players that if we could make this deal, this would just be a good deal. But also, you can, if you're listening to this show and you're getting the gist of what we're doing, you can also try and think archetypally, what type of a player are we, what are we solving for in Paravision? What are we trying to, like, improve, or what are we adding that they don't have, hopefully without taking away the charm? So who are some, like, look, I've got a few names myself, but who are some names that were coming to mind for you?
Yeah, so the first one, I'll just start with the top. Let's stick on Nota for now, because Nota, for my money, is the player that I would remove first. He is definitely the most eligible Bachelor to replace, because his roles are essentially what Nico's were before Kiyosuke came in, right? He's this trade fragger, like, slash semi-lurk on the T side, and he's, like, the primary rotator on the CT side. And as we mentioned, he's getting all these resources, right? So there are many candidates for this, but one I want to point out is actually Magnagers from BetBoom.
Yes.
Because they're essentially doing a lot of the same things. Like, they have the odd position that's slightly different, like Dust2 A rotator or B rotator. But these spots are similar enough that, like, if you look at the numbers at the bottom of the CT map rolls, like, they're pretty high because the way you play them is very, very similar. And if you play one of them, you can almost always adapt to the other one. And Magnagers is one of these players that's actually been doing really well in BetBoom for my money. And if you look at basically all of these categories on this screenshot, The aggression, you know, is pretty high on the T side. They're not doing that much entry work. One difference is that Magnagez likes to lurk a little bit more than he would be able to on this team. But like, aside from that, the T side is pretty balanced across the board. And on the CT side as well, like, very, very similar, right? The only difference is really on the CT side, there's that team play section. And what team play basically means is how much help are you getting? Like, when you're playing, do you have a lot of teammates around you, or are you sort of like a solo player? And obviously Nota, because he's playing in a Paravision system, he's normally, like, always got a buddy with him. He's very, very rarely taking, like, a solo gunfight or doing, like, a push on his own or something like this, right? Which, if anything, I think that'd probably help a player like Magnagers. So, yeah, this is the first candidate that I would really want to push for.
No, by the way, I love this pickup. It's actually a player where I think almost any Russian team that needs this role, this is one of the most obvious people to consider, because I always tell people the problem you have with BetBoom, I notice a lot of fans do this way, this is why I keep framing it this way. I'll give you an example. When I was doing my pick'em and I go and look at all the rosters and I look at, like, Gaming Gladiators, I'm like, hey, I remember some of these guys, some other teams. That's what people are doing with BetBoom. And so the mistake they're making is almost everyone except Magnez used to be, like, a famous player who's done other things. So what people miss is he isn't just, like, some support player fifth, you know, forget. We had he's actually the best player in their team, and they know it, by the way. If you look how they use him in their team, they've given him star spots too. So I know what you mean. Like, if Norta's really getting all those resources, bro, this feels genuinely like, look, we can't know the whole, like, would he disagree with Jim? Would he say yes, sir, and run in? But if he did, like, skill-wise, this would be almost an immediate upgrade, right? If you added a player like this in, you could see them actually getting right back into the be a playoff team again, right?
Yeah, and Nota, by the way, like you mentioned in James' system, some players have got to run in when he says run in. Nota is not the guy that has to even do that. Like, there's not that much pressure on him to do that because you've got Jello, you've got Belchenyuk, yes. Right? So, yeah, I think this would be a fabulous upgrade. I guess the other one as well that I've got in mind is actually Flamus. And interestingly, Flamus did go to VP for a while, but it was Electronics VP, yep. Right? There's actually no overlap between him and James. But very similar to Magnages, like, roles very, very similar for the two of them. One of the main differences that Flamus is actually a lot more willing to be, like, a bombsite entry than Nota is. So if anything, Flamus almost could take some pressure off Jello, yeah. Right? Because we mentioned before that Jello is, like, essentially like a hard bombsite entry whenever they're doing an execute. And, you know, maybe they could split the difference between Flamus and him, and maybe he would be able to recover some of his form. But, again, across the board on almost all the other spots, like, pretty balanced. Again, Flamus likes to lurk a little bit more. Nota doesn't really get to do that. But aside from that, yeah, this would be another great candidate, I think.
One interesting thing about what you're bringing up, too, is when I do my infamous patented TM, eye test TM, which I eclipse, which basically just means, like, you have to be me in the same way as if someone else out there thinks they have a great time. It's just how they see the game, what their experience is, etc., right? But one of the things is, when I first looked at Paravision, this particular version of it, where they add Zwei, etc., right, yes, the stats are always going to tell you, by the way, Jim and Zwei are the best players, because Jim, the whole style of the team is that he gets his fucking op shots off, and Zwei just gets all the CT frags. By the way, nearly all Zwei's frags are just on CT side, by the way, guys, but that's why he's really good. If you go to his site, he's fucking banging at just being a turret and sitting on the site shooting everyone. He does have good aim. The problem is, when I looked at the other three, like, certainly Nota had the glow up in that, like, life game in the final against Falcons. Belchenyuk has good aim, by the way, especially for what shit roles he plays. But to me, the one that has always seemed like this is the player that actually might be able to one day be a good player, though. He isn't just a bot in James' system, but he won't just dismiss his Zello. Like, if you ever watch his game, he seems to be quite a talented player, actually. So I actually wonder, in this team, as you say, if they could either give him a little bit more, because maybe he's, like, ready to graduate to that level. Or actually, unlike what I said about a Nota type player, I actually do think if a player like this, put it sweet, say they went vice versa, say he went over to a Bet Boom or something, if you replaced him, I actually think he could be a star player. Looks pretty good. He just maybe needs more reps or experience. What do you think about Zelo in that sense?
Yeah, so interesting story. But before the Budapest Major, I was actually doing some, it was just like a little scouting report, basically, for, I won't say who, but I basically, like, combed through some of the demos, combed through some of the data, and I was giving my judgment on, like, what kind of players are these, what are their responsibilities, and, like, what is the shape of this team. And what I said back then is that James is exactly as he's always been, pretty much, except he baits a little bit less, and it's only really the T side where you see his sort of signature, save my AWP and I'll call around me. AW was literally just like a util, like, he bought refrag not for doing the shooting and the aim practice, but for learning the lineup, right. If you know what I mean.
Sure.
And Jello was like the one rifler where I was like, yeah, this guy might actually hold to this level. Like, he actually looks really good. He looks really sharp. Nota, for me, was a complete paper tiger. I thought he was going to fall off a cliff. And looking at it now, like, I think most of those predictions kind of came true, yeah. Right? Like, with the arc, we've seen them go down. And yeah, I do completely agree. Like, Jello for me looks like that player who, of any of the players on this team, that sort of has maybe even more room to grow and improve. I think he's definitely number one.
By the way, that's also why, just to point that contrast, that this is a different Jim who I do think learned some things from CS2 and from being a VP. That's also the other thing is, if you think about it, right, it also makes more sense why he needed more stars back in CSGO, because actually he did play that absurdly slow T style where they just really did run the clock all the way down and do 7 million fakes and then last second go on a bomb set with 9 seconds left to get the bomb planted with 1 second, right? They don't do that as much in this team, man. Like as we're saying, they really do just group up and it's like he just calls a timer and they just go in on that timer. Like, I even think, by the way, they're one of those teams where if I ever do watch parties, I always make this point, if anyone's ever seen them, you can literally see the teams doing the, like, 20-year-old concept of, like, going on 40 seconds. You can even see on the timer when, like, by when people start to move, that some people literally just use the clock time. And the ones who do that, I always say, even though it's a bit noobish, is you don't have to do it on 40 every time, mate. Do it on 38 or do it on 41, and, you know, because eventually that becomes, they're one of those teams though, mate. Like, you can tell they're told, everyone going on this. So actually, in some ways, he's found sort of like, this is to something I meant to say earlier. He's found almost like a band-aid or like a streamlining mechanism to avoid what the flaw of the team was, which is if you go too slow with this squad, everyone's going to have to make too many decisions. They'll fuck it up on T-side. At the same time, James historically, he's not snappy. He doesn't just call a million rushes, does he? So he's found a way to sort of simultaneously be able to slow down, read the map. Notice what you said earlier. His teammates aren't stupidly peeking a corner and dying. If anything, their job is don't fucking peek till I say it. But when I tell everyone to go, let's just go completely. Like the go button is crazy when they press it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this so many times. Like, I remember watching the matches at the Budapest Major, actually, and so many times you'd be like, oh, Paravision are definitely going to lose here. Like, they've got to win this round to get into overtime or something. And in the first 20 seconds, like, James just called some simple group outside B on Dust2 and let's just execute. And you're looking at the minimap and it's like, there are three players here. This is, like, the most obvious hit ever. Like, they're just going to get mowed down. And somehow they just come through the other end of it and they win.
Yes.
And it's like, how? No other team is doing this. Like, it does seem like James just has an eye for coming up with executes that can just mow through whatever's on the other side of them. So I don't blame him for doing this kind of call, this kind of system of calling, like, at all, because clearly it works. Should we look at the other players?
Yeah.
Because, look, there are quite a few players that could replace Nota, but obviously a lot of people are calling for Belchenok's head as well, so I just wanted to have a look at...
By the way, let me give you a little reason why as well. I'll do it in an inimitable Thorin style. You could obviously just take this and just take out the spikes and just phrase it in a very plain manner. It wouldn't even be that much of a diss. I would say as a Thorin, one of my problems with Belchenok, even though I do acknowledge he's certainly not like putting in a star position or something, is, mate, he just seems a bit brain dead, that's all. Which again, to be polite, would just be he's inexperienced at Tier 1 and he's having to play matches against people where essentially he's having to make decisions above his pay grade. It's not a terrible aim, but like every now and then, in fact, even his aim's a bit streaky. He'd have some banging clips. He's had some really great highlights. The problem I have in his case is, though, I do feel like for that sort of a role, I don't actually expect loads of frags. That's the joke. He could do frags. I sort of want someone a bit stabler or someone that can sort of rely on a little bit more. So what type of player are we thinking of to replace him?
Yeah, so one really obvious pick, actually, that... I don't know. It's one that I'm sure everyone has suggested already is Fame, right? Because if you look at like what Fame used to do and kind of what he still does now, like Fame is the most obvious one for one, essentially, with Belchenok. Like he wants to be the primary lurker. He wants to be an anchor on the CT side. And Fame, of the two, like people group Fame and Flit together, right? Fame is the player that went to K27 or whatever and has actually been playing. He's been grinding, right? Well, Flit, meanwhile, has just been sat on VP's bench, basically. He hasn't really been playing officials. And so for that reason, and also just based on my memory of Fame as a player, like, I actually do think he was quite an intelligent player. People didn't give him that much credit for it, because if you remember where Fame came from, he was basically like the number one ranked face-it player for a time, and so he just kind of got plucked based on that fact, seemingly. Like, I'm sure there was some more advanced scouting going into it, but you know, he essentially was meant to be like a B-mass or something, just a player that's cracked and you just take him from face-it and plop him in and see how it goes, right? But I think he was definitely like way more impressive than any of the other players like this that we've seen. Because it seems like you put him in certain mid-round situations, he's never really that erroneous in terms of the decisions he makes. He doesn't really seem to throw rounds in the same way that, you know, Belchenok, granted, he kind of does a few times. Like, you know, him and Nota have had their fair share of radar moments, big mistakes, yeah, right? Yeah. And I think with Fame, like, he's already familiar with James' system. He kind of knows what's expected of him.
It's crazy, the overlap on CT positions as well, bro. This is like, it's very rare when you use that roster simulator on ReadyGG that you actually get someone who on T and CT always has an automatic like overlap. Usually, you know, you might have to find a couple of CT spots for a guy who fits the T side role, or the T side role slightly off, like, you know, it's a space taker versus an entry fragger. But you've got all this, mate, this is one of the better like natural fits I've seen. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. And by the way, just on that, I haven't mentioned it yet, but one thing I've been working on that's currently on that ReadyGG site as well, it's not just this roster simulator anymore, but I've also got like, it's like a database of per event, the positions that all the players are playing.
All right.
So I'm mostly just passing it for the tier one events, right? The big ones, but I've got like a couple tier two ones there as well. And I love checking this sometimes, because sometimes you'll see that a player is just completely changed from like how they were earlier in a team or something.
Yeah.
Fame has been pretty consistent in what he's been doing, like even back to VP, like he's basically been playing the same game. So I have no reason to assume that he's going to fall off massively. And to be honest, I think he could be a strict upgrade over Belchenok, even if I'd rather see Nota replaced.
And then, as you said, the other part that's obviously, like, you would hope would also make this an amazing, smooth transition. He's already played with Jim. So you would hope he could take some of the things from when he was with him and then update a bit to the new system. And I actually think that's a pretty slam dunk move, mate. Yeah, it's actually pretty good. Because as I said, I do want us, on the one hand, here's what's hard. I do want them to probably remove, I would probably remove both. I might even remove both. But like I say, I wouldn't just take any good player. It's got to be someone who's going to also, like, retain some of what we like about Paravision. Otherwise, we just become VP again after that, surely, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you could absolutely just rip these two out and put Fame and Flit in and just run it back. And, you know, maybe it would be fine. Maybe it would kill this Paravision. Who knows?
Who's the other one? Because you had another one for Belchenok, right? Who's the other alternative? Yes.
So this one is a lot more of a risk. It's a more of an unknown player. But from Hotu, there's a player called Mizu. And the roles here are actually also a pretty good overlap. And Mizu, even though it's a small sample size, he only played really, like, yes. I think IEM Rio is the only tournament where he's sort of been able to showcase himself. He was, like, the fifth best player in that tournament, even though he only played, like, two games or something. Yes. So, yeah, small sample size, but from it, like, the role overlap with Belchenok is pretty perfect. There's definitely a big risk that with a player this inexperienced and this young, he might not want to go into, like, make this jump, if you know what I mean. But at least he isn't doing what, like, Zelex had to do in Mauls, where he's completely changing all of his roles. Like, this is his natural game. And so if you want to take a risk on, like, a younger, like, crack Damer, Mizu, I think, is the one I would go for.
By the way, even though I've stressed, just because I don't want people to, like, think about it, right? It's a GM team. We're by definition working on the fringes of what normally things look like in a team. There's different roles that don't exist in other teams. Even the paradigm of how you're going to play in the team is quite different and distinct in contrast to all other tier one teams. So at the same time, as I'm actually being, like, cautious about who do we put in, I also do feel like the really good news, despite how harsh it seems like we've been in this episode, I think we've also been quite complimentary about the other elements, is I also do think, though, this is a team where, as long as you get the right rough range of play in and give them some time, I think they actually, some of these moves could almost be slam dunks, though, and could actually, I could almost guarantee the team will be better and will be competitive again, because sadly, I do feel like the joke is, on the desk, I'd say, the one-noter trick of Paravision has sort of been and gone, hasn't it? Like, they're not going to hit the same heights again, guys. Like, sadly, I always used to say on the desk about teams like this, you have to play them a few times in order to play. Well, the problem is everyone's done that now. And in fact, it's gotten to the point now where it's become diminishing returns even against the top teams. And actually, when we were discussing earlier, by the way, the sorts of teams that struggle against them, this is why I actually do think teams like Foot were sent here to show that Paravision, they have strengths in some areas, but they don't. Because someone like a Foot, what do they even do against them? They just run through your face, mate, and shoot you in the head. Like, there's no chance for Jim to do any of this cool shit against a team. That's why, actually, that's exactly the sort of team that eats them up. So I do also think, like, this is actually, like I said at the beginning of the episode, this is actually a perfect one, because on the one hand, we criticise them, but they get it. And in fact, they look like they're absolutely ready that the day this major ends, they'll probably go and do maybe even literally the moves we're suggesting. Like, I think at least within this sort of a range of, like, who will get replaced in what way. And I do actually have, I have to say, I'll never be like a massive fan, because there's elements about their style that is a bit annoying if you like traditional CS and seeing fights and stuff, but at the same time I will always appreciate, like, intellectually what they're trying to do and what Jim's style is. And I like people who don't just try to be, like, you know, a bad version of someone else. You try and be like the most a strong version of yourself and see if you can be a hard counter or bring something different. So actually I don't know about you, but I have fairly sort of optimistic feelings, sentiments towards what they could be the second season if they make a roster. They actually get a pretty cool team to have in the scene, right?
Yeah, it's definitely very rare that you can look at a team as well and say, like, they've got a couple of players that you could, like, relatively easily replace and they would probably be an upgrade. Like, I mean, normally when we're looking at teams now, like, if we were looking at Falcons or something, you know, we would have, like, maybe two players at most that they could kind of possibly get that would be an upgrade. But looking at this team, it's like, yeah, there's a list of players. There are loads of them. I do think it's interesting that we have Jame, because I do quite like a diverse range of play styles. I think it does make the game more interesting. To watch, I think we all kind of do know that the most fun Counter-Strike to watch is when teams are more willing to let the rounds breathe, right? Like, we like defaulty teams, like the way Falcons, Vitality play, because it's exciting, it's fun, there are tempo changes. I think Jame's playstyle is like the antithesis of that. It's like, he does not want to let rounds breathe at all. He wants to suffocate them. He wants to, you know, slam the hammer down 20 seconds in, do an execute, get it over with. And the fact that we have that, yeah, I think it's good for the scene. I think this team definitely has a chance to rise further than this. Because unlike with VP, when Jane was still on it, like, you were looking at that and thinking, what do they improve to get higher?
Yeah.
This team, there are options, right? Like, yes. It's not like any of these players are, like, exceptionally brilliant or something. And, you know, you saw what the Zwei edition did, right? They immediately got, like, a level up when he came in. Who's to say they can't do that again?
I've got one last little angle for you at the end, which is, since it's roster mechanic, and that could also mean people leave the roster for good and go elsewhere, I want to ask you this question. Another thing people did do earlier this year, which I also thought was a little bit crazy, is they did the spitball where when this team got good, because they looked and obviously their brain's like, well, I don't recognise half these players. And wait a minute, it wasn't the Zwei guy, even not that good on Spirit. I think a lot of people also went, right, now that Jim's back, fuck this Paravision project, mate. Get Jim to Spirit. Get Jim to Falcon. They wanted Jim. Him to be the one that left because they thought, right, he's been reclaimed. He's an all-time great player, right? One last thing I want to say is this, but I want to leave it up to you on this. I also would caution people against that because, again, a bit like the Cadian example, perhaps, where I also, listen, I bought into that completely. I thought, well, if he was that good in Heroic, imagine if you give him the best players. It actually turns out, by the way, his system then no longer functions and actually he falls off and then where the fuck's Cadian now? Like, so the obvious question is this. I'm sure there are some teams he could work in, but it will be tricky if you want to do the other one of like, right, Jim gets the call up and he goes to a bigger squad. It's going to be tricky to pick where he goes though, right? It's not as obvious and there's not that many teams maybe have space for Jim, or they'd have to, I assume, rehaul the entire squad pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, this is an especially spicy time to say this, right? Because Spirit might unironically be favourites for the upcoming major.
Yeah.
Like, with how they were playing recently, like them and Vitality are like 1A, 1B, right? And so I will say this, I still think James switching to Rifle IGL and going to Spirit, I would like to see it. But here's the key thing. I think the reason it failed with Cadian is because Cadian didn't have his guy as the authoritative coach behind him.
Right.
I think the only way that James to Spirit move that, like, you know, me and a couple other people have been speculative about would work is if Dastan came with him. Because right. I think you need someone that's able to, like you mentioned earlier, to be the more authoritarian, like dictator type that's willing to discipline the players. I think if that happened, I think there's a good chance it could be interesting. I have no idea if Jame is capable of calling without the AWP. I mean, Cadian clearly wasn't on Astralis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, on the flip side, players like Fallen seem perfectly capable of doing it. Like, Fallen's had a good run, you know. So I think, yeah, the difference maker for me, if that kind of move ever were to happen, is whether he could bring Dastan along with him. And yes. I think it could be quite exciting, but maybe not now, you know. Maybe let this Spirit have some time to cook, because they look like they might actually be winning the major.
I also just say at the end, I think it's quite telling that even though you are a proponent of that move, even you haven't given up the AWP though, you aren't doing what the fan does, which is like, it's kick Shiro, bring him, and it's like, mate, that's such a crazy drastic rehaul how every player would have to play. And with you, if you move the Jame up, then it has to be that Jame no longer is the AWPer. Like, actually, I also think, by the way, him being an AWPer makes more sense in a team like this, because again, we're inverting a lot of the concepts. Like, if we had, for example, if we had a Lord of Star Riflers, we wouldn't want him as the AWPer. Like, this style of play would be too abusive, right? So I do feel like people have to understand, you can't have it all at once, can you? There always has to be a trade-off to some degree. Since time immemorial, great artists have been supported by patrons who believed in their work and wanted to contribute to their efforts. Well, what's more fitting than the greatest esports content artist being supported by my patrons, the Skrilluminati? So this video and the others on my channel was kindly supported by Toucan, Nikki, Jason, Jensen Gore, and you know it, a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to ask a question in my video AMA? Want teasers? See who the upcoming guests are? Maybe you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content, or take part in one of those lengthy discussions where you get to set the topic. If any of these perks appeal to you or others, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Where? In the description box, there is a Patreon link.